After 25 years in the fashion industry, I've realized that fashion is not really about the clothes, it's about the people. I'm Laura Van Root Poole, and this is What We Wore. Sue Sarter is an inspiring force. She started her namesake brand of joyful dresses at 47 years old after focusing on raising her three children. Sue's story is a testimony to the power of writing your own timeline and finding your authentic calling. Sue Sarter, I'm so excited to have you in person in the studio and in Charlotte, and I'm sorry for such a very cold day.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I have been a fan for so long, and Laura, I am just delighted to be here with you today, so thanks for having me.
Oh, can't wait. Will you tell the listeners where you're from?
Oh, my gosh, that's a loaded question. So, you know, like so many people, I'm from all over the place.
Yeah.
I was born in Needham, Massachusetts, and spent summers on Cape Cod, where my parents are now retired. Oh. And in fourth grade, my dad was transferred to Wall Street, and we moved to Summit, New Jersey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then I went to Tulane and ended up in the South and have lived in Louisiana for over 30 years.
What did you like about growing up in the Northeast?
You know, the Northeast and New England in particular, it's such a feeling, and it's informed a lot of my, you know, design decisions and the love of the outdoors and art and just the salty air and the my dad calls it the Portuguese cure, you know, being able to dunk in the bay and just be able to kind of wash everything away. So we made sure that raising our kids in Louisiana that we would at least go up there once a year and sort of have that unadulterated experience of being on the Cape and the coast, you know, New England coast.
Yeah. There's really nothing like a New England summer.
It is. It's a beautiful thing.
Other than the black flies.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. That and the no-see-ums is something to be reckoned with.
Did you gravitate towards fashion or art as a child?
That's as long as I can remember. Yeah. So just being really artistic, appreciating the visual world, took, you know, as many art classes in high school as I could. We had an incredible art teacher. And so all through high school, I painted and did art. And then in the early 90s, I actually worked for an art gallery in Europe for a while, and in Europe, in Paris, and in Monte Carlo. And then after that, when I graduated college, it was like, okay, art or design, which one am I going to go into? Mm-hmm. And I interviewed with Calvin Klein, and I interviewed with Mark Hampton and Chanel all in one day.
Oh my God, what did you wear?
It was honestly like the craziest day. And I wore a black suit that my mom helped me buy at an outlet.
Filene's.
My mom's massive Filene's basement gal. It may have been Filene's.
Wasn't that just the very best thing in the world?
Oh my gosh. My mom, Filene's basement in Boston. And then she's a big Marshalls fan too. I mean, she's a upcycler and a thrifter by heart anyways. Oh, yeah. But
that's very New England of her.
Very New England. And then to go to Bloomingdale's for the blueberry muffin and there's that yogurt.
Jordan Marsh.
Yes. There you go. Yeah. Wow. It's all coming back to me. But so I had those three interviews in the day. It was such an awkward day. I ended up taking the job with Calvin. I had set my hair so that it could be wavy for Chanel, and I had the red lipstick in my pocket.
Oh, my God.
And in the taxi over, I was brushing my hair out to have more of like the severe kind of drone look with the Max Spice lip liner and Twiggy or whatever it was, the real brown. And then I interviewed with Susan Sokol, who was the head of the women's collection at the time. And then she reached out later, or her assistant, and said, "You're hired, but Calvin saw you in the hallway and you have to ditch the red lipstick." Because I guess a little was coming through.
Really?
Yeah, he called me. Mm-hmm.
I do remember that about Calvin, that you would, it was the first place, I know Prada did it as well and still does it, but you couldn't bring your own coffee in. If you brought coffee in from Starbucks or you know, off the street, you had to pour it into a Calvin cup when you got in.
The branding went all the way through, and it was so wonderful to have experienced that at that level.
Oh, and at that moment too. What was the year? Oh, it was the 90s?
Yes, 90, 91.
Oh my God.
And just being
unbelievable.
Unbelievable being part of that, and the people in that space. I mean, Narcissa Rodriguez was there, and Carolyn Bessette was there, and
Scott Newkirk was
there. Yeah, just incredibly beautiful, talented people. And But yeah, the branding and that experience and getting that on the front end, like hire her, but she's got to, you know, straighten the hair and the lipstick's got to come down. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did your fashion change when you moved from New England?
Yeah.
Did it change? I mean, did you realize, did you notice how preppy you had been?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Even though it was just, you know, fourth grade, I have an older sister and brother. And, you know, then it was all the Widewell cords and the Papagallos and the Farrell sweaters. And I think, you know, somewhere around junior year, I was vacillating between that preppier look. And then there was all of a sudden the like gypsy genie thing. And the remember the like, it was almost like MC Hammer pants, but they were tied. I don't know. I tried it all. I was willing to try it all. Never had an exact style of my own, but I definitely was out there trying my best.
I know this is something you don't often talk about, but will you share a little bit about the accident you had as a child?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So when I was 9, I had an accident that impaired the vision in my left eye. It was a lawnmower accident. My mom had planted some – we lived on kind of a hill in an old English Tudor home in Summit. She had planted roses. But the mulch was out, and some of the roses weren't planted yet. And we had one of those old ride-on tractor lawnmowers. We would ride it for fun around, you know, kind of hilly and fun. And it just was unfortunate. We had a neighbor who just ended up kind of riding on it, and the blade was still on. And I was lying down, kind of sunbathing outside. You know, it was just one of those things that it tore my optic nerve and my retina and left me with patches over both eyes for subsequent months and on steroids. And as a young woman, gained a lot of weight. And
How old were you?
9.
Oh, my God.
So I think it just made me all the more appreciative of the visual world and really never to take that for granted. And, you know, so that's a silver lining. And then really today, the beauty is that medicine has advanced so much that, you know, with all of the laser surgeries and everything with ophthalmology that's advanced, that if it happened to one of our kiddos today, it'd be an easy repair for an optic nerve or a retina. But at the time, it was just too far gone.
Did it damage your...
Oh, depth.
Your depth perception sense of color and things like that?
Yes, I do not play tennis.
Oh, really?
I can't. I mastered lacrosse in high school. It was like I was determined. So I played basketball and lacrosse. But tennis is just still, I mean, it's just comical to watch me play tennis. But yeah, but color is still very much, you know, my right eye is very strong. Huh. But I don't take anything for granted. I already was very visual and especially visual.
Did it happen during the summer?
It was right before the summer. So the summer after there was no swimming, I had to quit ballet, quit gymnastics, no forward, you know, tumbles or for the pressure. It was all about keeping the pressure stabilized.
And then by the time fall came, you were back in school?
Back in school, but you know, had gained a lot of weight with all the steroids so that I wouldn't reject
it.
And so – yeah, I think that made me all the more like more sensitive and just thoughtful and, you know, kind of helped.
So that was 9. And then you say you spent the rest of your...
I was born a very old person.
Yeah,
so
I mean, I think
I was already very serious. So so I become kind of younger as I've gotten older. Kind of became a lot, really, now that I'm thinking about it, more of an observer of things and just more thoughtful and more introspective. Yeah.
Did it make you more risk adverse?
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, to this day, I don't. I mean, that's probably the one thing. We don't own a lawnmower. We don't. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think so. Great question.
And so then after spending your childhood there, you chose to go to New Orleans, to Tulane for college.
Yeah.
How did you come up with that?
So my mom was a guidance counselor. My brother went to Michigan. My sister went to Boston. My younger sister went to Colorado. And I just really wanted my own thing.
Yeah.
And Tulane, when I went to visit, it was just magic. It just was – I mean, I could just feel it. Just the creativity running through the city and the art and the culture and the people and the level of acceptance with people. It was just such a beautiful, kinetic, magical space. And it still plays such a big role in our lives.
I'm going through college visits with my daughter. Did you visit before you applied or did you visit after you got in?
So I visited before and I was 18 and my mom let me fly.
Oh my gosh, by yourself?
Yeah. And actually, I met my husband that weekend.
What?
Who's 4 years older. We didn't date. We didn't, you know, 9 years ensued between the space, but I actually met him that weekend. He was a fraternity brother of one of my brother's best friends from Cape Cod Sea Camps, who was at Tulane. And so my mom said, oh, well, you could just go down and, oh, honey, you'll be fine. And meanwhile, I'm staying with all these fraternity guys. And but yeah, it was a great weekend. But I experienced all of that. You know,
I mean, what did crawfish. You think when you came to like when you landed in New Orleans? Were you like, what in the world?
Yeah, I thought everyone was going to speak French, and I had taken French. I mean, I was a little bit misled in what I thought it was going to be like, but it was everything and more. It was just fantastic.
Yeah, and what did you major in?
Art history.
Oh wow,
and studio art. And I did my honors thesis on Larry Rivers. So I got to fly to New York and interview him and. It was pretty cool.
What did you love about the South then? What do you love about it now?
Honestly, Louisiana, really a lot like New England. It just speaks to me. It just got a hold of me. And I met my husband at Tulane, and we started dating my senior year.
And he's from Louisiana.
Yes. And he's a surgeon and a musician. He kind of has both sides of the brain going, which I kind of do too. And so we have a lot of fun, especially when we're in New Orleans. But, you know, the South is just – it's wonderful. It's collegial. It's beautiful. And as far as designing now, there's so many places to glean inspiration, especially the women and the way they like to dress and the fact that they want to be more exuberant and more colorful. And, you know, it's a great place for me to be inspired and to create.
Definitely. And so after college, you moved to Europe to work?
Yeah. So I had a stint in Paris and in Monte Carlo with a gallery. It was called the Marisa Del Rey Gallery. They did the FIAC in Paris at the Grand Palais, but they also did the Biennale on the grounds of the casino. I mean, this was like, wow. I can't believe I got to, it was all very small snippets, but I got to experience the big world before I settled in the deep South. So it was almost like by the time we were ready to settle down, you know, I felt like I'd had little snippets of living in New York and that was a blessing for me because it really made me appreciate it all, but made me kind of ready for that next step.
Did you go by yourself?
I did. I did a lot of stuff by myself. I'm very independent.
I mean, I love a solo travel.
I'm a solo travel girl.
I love a movie by myself. Yeah. I love dinner by myself.
I love quiet spaces and I love all of that.
Yeah. What did you learn about yourself living in Europe at such a young age?
Yeah.
Alone.
I learned that I love to be independent. I love art and culture. I love to experience all of those things. The more, the merrier. I realized that it could be a really lonely space too, especially Paris. I think Paris, to me, so far in my limited amount of travels in my life so far, I think it's probably the loneliest city if you're not with – you just need a friend or a partner or someone to share it with because I think it's so joyful and there's so much to learn in Paris. But if you're alone, it's a little intimidating to go to all those spaces and sharing it makes it all the more magic.
And then why did you come back?
I came back. I had taken some French over there at a place called the Euro Centre, and my time was done with the gallery, and it was time for me to apply for the real job. And so that's when all of that ensued, and I ended up at Calvin.
You weren't married at the time.
No. We were dating, though.
Uh-huh. And he was in residency.
He was in residency.
In Louisiana?
In Maryland.
Oh, okay. So halfway in between.
Yeah. I got a job with Calvin doing visual merchandising. For the D.C. area.
And so you lived...
Neiman, Saks, Chevy Chase.
Oh, wow.
All of that.
Well, that's that's a whole skill set in itself.
Yeah. So I got the whole visual merchandising thing, which is great. And if he'd come do a personal appearance, I could go ahead and, you know, get the store ready. And so, you know, manage all of the aesthetics beforehand.
Those were legendary stores, too, at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Weren't they Tyson's Corner?
And Neiman's, Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
And Saks, Chevy Chase, and all of that.
And what did you learn from Calvin?
Oh, gosh. Well, it was never like, hey, Sue, hey, Calvin. I mean, it was always, I was in the showroom. I was one of the women's collection girls and assistants in the showroom and then helped with the fashion shows and then went on the road to do visual merchandising. What I learned was really that all branding is good branding. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember the Marky Mark billboard. Remember, I mean, all of this stuff.
I mean, Kate Moss. Kate.
Yeah, it was so controversial at the time, but it was so poignant. It was all marketing is good marketing. Any buzz is good buzz. But he used to walk through in his underwear and, you know, everybody used to come through. I mean, it was big. It was, you know, Bianca Jagger and Sharon Stone, and because Carolyn Bessette would dress all of these gals, and it was an incredible time.
But as an entrepreneur, what are there things that you learned from him or watching him work or watching how the business works?
Oh, completely. I mean, you have to be your brand. You have to be it through and through. You have to stay focused. Stay in your lane. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so
many, because they really lost the they really went off the rails.
Yeah.
There's no collection anymore.
That's right.
It's just underwear.
Gosh, it was and it was such a beautiful time.
Yeah.
I was so focused.
Yeah.
And the aesthetic was, you know, so clean, and there was nothing like it. And every woman felt so beautiful. Mm. In those clothes.
Yeah.
Being focused, not looking to the right or the left at other brands, just finding your vision and just staying true to it and not, you know, diversifying too much too soon. I mean, you know.
And maybe not selling out.
And never sell out. That's definitely, would never, like, it's just not at all. Yeah.
Because I think life is long and I don't know, like, what's the point? Like, what are you going to do?
Make it special and make it authentic.
What about the experience working for Calvin cemented your commitment to working in fashion? I mean, were you ever like, I got to get out of here. I'm never working in here again.
Or no, I definitely got the bug. I definitely was seeing how I did not need to stay in New York any longer. And then the lure of the South and being with my husband and wanting to, who was then, we were dating, but we were getting close to getting engaged. And I saw the commute and the fashion industry and what it did to people, the harshness of the city.
With families.
Yeah. And I saw the young women who wanted families so badly and couldn't get that because they were so driven or so dedicated to the industry. And they were truly sad.
Yeah.
And I was really observing that. And so I saw, you know, I've got something here. And I knew I wanted to do something eventually, but I backburnered it.
Yeah.
For a long time. And then I exploded.
Yeah, exactly. You really hid that and waited.
It was all brewing.
Yeah, because I would say you definitely identify so much as an entrepreneur now. Was it something that you think was in you then?
Yeah. I've always dreamed of that. We talk about it. Everyone in my family's big business people, other than me. I was always the artsy one. Susan, yeah. she'll draw that, you know. And I was always not poo-pooed, but I was never that going to be the business person that knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
So I kind of felt like I had a little bit of something to prove. It was always brewing. And
how did you know that raising three children completely waiting for this dream, how did you know that was important?
So just intuitively, I kind of always knew it. I'm a big visioner and I like to sort of listen to the, you know, the world and what it's telling me. And I knew at the time that being a general surgeon and the intensity at which my husband had to practice in this small southern town, because you kind of have to be a doctor to everyone. That was his dream, to wear all those hats and to come home. It really was his true dream. And now he's done it for 30 years.
And you live in his hometown?
Yeah.
Monroe, which is a small town.
In northeast Louisiana. It's truly almost to Arkansas.
Right.
And so, you know, going back there and having him fulfill his dream. And we raised the kids together, but I definitely had to be the one that was full on.
Yeah.
And then when my son was a freshman and the girls had graduated and gone on to college, we pretty much had a pow. I knew that I couldn't, you know, and my daughter's now a therapist and she's like, Mom, there's a name for that. It's, you know, and there's a psychological name when you,
and what
you know,
is
you're
it?
Almost 50. There's a name. I'll have to ask her, but you're almost 50. You're in your late 40s and you're like, who am I? What's my legacy I'm going to leave? What's my identity? And that was like creepy. And I think that's what you call a midlife crisis. Somebody, you know, when they buy the Porsche or they have the affair. But I felt it. I'm like, I am feeling that big time. And I think it's time. And so I just asked their permission and they were like, go for it, Mom.
They, your children and your husband?
Yeah. Oh, it was like, go.
And had you said anything to him early on? Like, this is, I just want you to know, like, this is not going to be it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he said, great.
He was always fine with me doing it all along. He's super supportive, like the nicest guy. But we knew that with his profession, we just couldn't find the balance.
Yeah. And I would say, I would think traveling from Monroe is probably not simple.
So, no, it's just, it's a bear.
Yeah. Did you ever, during the time of raising them, did you ever sketch out sort of the dream that you had?
I was always thinking about it, and I knew it was going to be, you know, caftans and tunics or dresses, and I was always, you know, very obsessed with textiles. But mainly I used my painting as my creative outlet. So all those years I did shows, I did this sort of form of abstract expressionism that I called atmospheric scapes, and with no sketching at all, just a way to release the creative energy. And I'd paint sometimes till 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning. And I have a dear friend who's an interior designer. And so she actually, when we first moved to Monroe, my husband and I kind of had a come to Jesus that we both needed a creative outlet. And so he said, okay, I'm going to get a band together, and you're going to have your first show by fall of this year. And so in November, he had this band called Code Blue and the Flatliners, and I had my first art show at my dear friend's store.
Oh, wow.
So that was sort of our way of saying, okay, we got to keep the creative going throughout all of this.
Did you have a studio?
Back of the house or anywhere in the house. I mean, my stuff was everywhere. I mean, I'm messy that way. Every closet just I was not organized about the art supplies.
Were there signs that that this would be a project, a collaboration with India? I mean, had you had connections to India?
You know,
before?
I didn't. And the India thing happened because in an effort to fill my time and do something meaningful in the community, I was on a lot of boards, and I was on the, you know, president of the local museum and the Episcopal day school that the kids went to. And there was a woman who grew up in India who was on all these boards with me, and she had a family design team that made all of their clothes, a couture tailor, husband and wife.
Right, right.
We actually started this little line together, and it was called Sue Anu at the very beginning.
Oh.
And and that's where the precipice came with India.
I mean, how did that start? Were you familiar with block printing? And
so it started with hand-dyed silks. Anu and I decided, okay, we're going to do 10 to 12 samples of hand-dyed silks, like 80 gram, like the finest silk you can get.
In India.
Right. So we designed, like I designed a tunic, a caftan, and then we did long and short. We did sleeveless. We added the band collar. And then we did just a couple square cotton caftans, and they block printed this little elephant. The elephant was our symbol.
Mm-hmm.
So we had these, you know, about 12, maybe 15 with the block, couple teeny block prints, caftans. And we had a pop-up in our hometown. It was gangbusters.
Oh, really?
But I think because we allowed them to choose from anything and, you know, dye it any color and any style and any size, the touch involved with making that first order was tremendous. So we learned, okay, we need to them too much options. And so from there, it took off. And a couple years later, Anu moved to Houston, and she works for her family business, has a very large family with younger children than me. And so I took it under Sue Sarter. And then I started working with Jaipur and the block printing studios there. And now everything's come full circle since 2015-16. And now I'm back working with the same husband-wife team.
Oh, wow.
And we have our own workrooms in Delhi, and they run it. And so, and I just got to visit them, and they, it's a husband-wife team, and we have 28 people working for us. But the block prints are still outsourced.
Mm-hmm.
And what I didn't know getting into it was that block printing is it's a family business.
Yeah.
And it gets handed down from family to family. So we actually are working with 3 different workrooms now. And I'm trying to design a lot of my own proprietary blocks, because you do see block printing out there in the industry a lot.
Right.
And so, but they're heading that up for me as well.
What was it like the first time you went to India?
So 3 times I got put off because of COVID.
Right.
And so this was actually my first trip to go in person, which was just last month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I did everything on WhatsApp in the middle of the night, and I have hundreds of thousands of pictures on my phone and sketches and back and forth. And it's amazing how much you can do without being in person. But I was dying to get over there, and it was amazing. And there were tears, and there
was. I was going to say, I bet you
cried. It was incredible meeting them. It really almost brought me to my knees, because it was just this buildup.
Yeah.
And then I walk in and I see them and it's just hugs and all the Master G's lined up and the patterns and everything I had sent.
Yeah.
It was just so validating. And I just saw it all come before me in that moment.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
I've told the story before, but I know Dries, the story about Dries and his the embroidery workshops he works with in India, that he did this one big collection that was filled with these incredible embroideries. And then the next season, that wasn't sort of part of the plan.
Yeah.
And he realized that this company would go out of business. And so every single season he has embroideries because he's devoted to this family.
That's right. You do become devoted, and they are reliant on that. And then once the workload increases, they get more people and they become reliant on that level of work expectation. And so, and that we had big chats about that. I'm like, no, we're growing. We're growing thoughtfully, and we're still going to be small batch, and we want to have integrity.
Yeah.
But everybody has a job, and you know, we're going to move forward. And it is hard to scale over there.
Yeah.
Because every dress is made one at a time. And
it's
hard to find that balance. But I think we've achieved it. I know a lot of people don't stay working with India for that reason.
Yeah. It's a definitely a different
way of working. It's not for the faint of heart.
And you'll go back, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Your business is 5 years old?
Yeah, I'd say it's about five since it kind of caught on.
What year did you feel like you were successful?
It was 19, and it was like right as COVID was happening.
Right.
Is when it took off. And so I kind of, you know, had to turn to social media like so many.
Which probably really built your business.
It really did. I mean, Instagram became and still is about 40%, which the statistic is about 14, I think. And, you know, obviously we can't take social media for granted and we can't discard it, but mine's still very much driven by social media or by Instagram.
What year did you feel like this was going to be successful?
It was definitely 19. It was when I was at a pop-up for Natalie Bloomingdale with The Still. She has these incredible pop-ups. And we had gone out to L.A. and done an event with her in Casa Perfect. And we were in Houston at Paloma's shop on Bama Lane. And I unboxed the first box of the flounce dress. Mm-hmm. And no one was interested in the caftans anymore. They were just digging in the boxes, and it was so much fun.
Yeah.
And that was the dress I really had put the most thought into.
Yeah.
And then that.
And it was the most you, probably. But what do you think is so successful about it? Why do you think it connects with people so much?
You know, I think part of it was the timing. Because at the time, the caftans were really hitting and the house dresses because of COVID and people were home more.
Yeah.
And then the designers were still, you know, the building boom was happening because people were wanting to make their homes more beautiful during COVID. And so the designers were still going to their site visits. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to wear comfortable.
But not look overdone.
Right. And so they could throw them on with their tinnies.
Yeah.
Or their cowboy boots or their Birkenstocks and, you know, ball cap, and they still looked chic.
Yeah.
There was this pattern play and this whimsical, fun part of it. And that kind of made it really take off was the designers wearing them as well.
Right.
But then everybody at home still wanted to be pretty. And I think because we kind of went dark for a little bit, the people wanted to be light and be happy and be joyous. And I think that came out of COVID too. So I kind of
colors.
The pattern play and the colors and the whimsy. And I think that kind of hit at the right time. And I hope that it'll be something that stays as a forever thing, even though we are going to get more sophisticated in fashion again and more streamlined and more solid color block. You know, I hope it'll stick.
Well, I have a theory, and this is coming from a recovering double mastectomy, but I think it lifts your boobs.
Yeah, because of where mine really need to be lifted, that's for sure.
I think it covers your arms. I think it gives you a waist, even if you don't have a waist.
Yeah.
I think it's actually specific elements like that. Sure color, sure joy.
Yeah.
But it's long enough that it hits right at the
thank
best
you.
Part of
it's
your leg.
It's meant to be flattering. I
think it's
curvy.
Really smart.
Thank you. I grew up very curvy, and I never would tell anyone, but I would buy like a size or two larger, and I'd alter it down so that I could have the curve and the waist. And I loved being feminine, but I found that most things that I loved in the design world were cut straight.
Yeah.
And so I really wanted it to my line to be an all play kind of thing, but feel feminine and give you shape. So thank you for recognizing that.
I think one of the most important parts of your story for the women listening is going to be the age that you started the business. Mm. You were 47 years old.
Mm. You know, if I could go back and do it over, I probably would have gone and, you know, I don't know. I was very much thoughtful in the way that I did it. I wish I had a little more, you know, inertia behind it, but everything happens for a reason. And I definitely waited. And I definitely feel that if someone has a vision or a dream, you know, clearly it's never too late to start. But what I'm finding now is that when I meet people in the industry, most of them are so much younger than me. Mm. I don't ever see, I've never seen age. I've never seen defining things like that. I've always just seen the person. That's just what I love about just our mutual humanness. But so I'm meeting all these cute young people and I'm thinking they're not seeing me as being older, but they're seeing me more in like a mentor.
Well, you, but you look like you're like 25. No, so I don't think that counts actually.
Hardly. But yeah, I just think everybody should go for it. I think just it's always, always a good time to exercise your creativity and follow your dreams. And there, everybody can have different phases of their life too. And I have to say, I'm having the best time of my life right now.
Yeah. So. You're a self-proclaimed optimist. Yeah. How has this evolved during this process?
Oh my gosh. I would always get in so much trouble because people would say you're way too, like your glass is way too full and you're going to be taken advantage of and you got to be more pragmatic. And I think as I've gotten older, enough has knocked me down and I've kissed enough frogs and I've seen the reality of what life can be like. Either through health crisis or just the reality in business of what can happen, that, you know, just more of a realist. But I'm really holding on to trying to stay very optimistic because I think we need to be.
Yeah.
We need more of it, you know. And so I don't want to let go of it, but I'm more of a realist now.
Do you think that this would have been a different career if you'd started it at 25?
Oh, yeah. I have no idea. I really don't.
Yeah.
I think had I stayed in the industry, I would have kind of worked up through the ranks and probably been within a design house longer. And I always kind of wonder what that would have looked like because I admired Susan Sokol, who was the head of Women's Collection so much, and Pat Prion and my boss, Monica Robb. Two of my bosses were African. My first right out of college were so two African-American women who were just dynamite. So I think I would have stayed and seen what that was really like, but that just wasn't my path. So
do you think that this has been more successful because you started it later?
Oh yeah. No, I think so. Cause I don't sugarcoat things anymore. I go right for it. I trust my gut. I really believe in that. And I just all the way, and it hasn't failed me yet. I mean, and also it's just me. I mean, I have some help now, thank goodness. But I think when it's you and you and you can trust your decisions, and I know, I mean, my gosh, I follow you and your ability to curate and you're using your instincts. I mean, being older allows you to trust in your instincts.
Yeah.
And it's an awesome feeling. So awesome.
It is really different.
I love it. Mm-hmm. It's a confidence that comes with it that's really great. Guys, you have a lot to look forward to.
You know, it's so funny. I just turned 51 and somebody sent me a picture of us when a friend and I were traveling. We were like 38. Mm-hmm. It was my 38th birthday or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't even remember turning 40. Like that seems so long ago. Uh-huh.
I don't either. I really don't. Just about today and what's forward.
And I do feel younger than I did then for sure. I looked at the pictures and I was like, I don't even know that person.
Oh, I'm way more lighthearted. And I was very serious all throughout my childhood and I'm much more lighthearted and fun now.
And do you think that's from children?
I think it's just life experience. I also think some people are born older and are more layered with however you want to look at it. And I was very, very born very old.
Yeah.
And very like I always had a serious look on my face and was always drawing and always, you know, and now I mean, I love laughter. I love fun. I'm very lighthearted and serious about my business, but I don't take myself seriously at all.
Yeah.
You know.
Rare.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't. It's just, you know, life's too short. I think just being here in this space is what's been so important to me. You know, I don't want to use the word bucket list because I really don't like it, but it has been. I mean, I visioned a lot for myself in my life. And then when I knew I was going to start this business, I just put a few things, and I don't like keep a huge cork board or anything. Mm-hmm. I do with my designs now, but my visioning board's all up here. Mm-hmm. And I love, and like, for example, with my husband, we're doing that now because he doesn't see things that way. And I love to vision.
Yeah.
And you know, he's practiced for 30 years. Like, what's the next step? You love music. You love philanthropy. You want to give back to the community. You love golf, you know, you play guitar.
He's still practicing?
Yeah. 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 But he also like plays pedal steel and plays guitar and is a great vocalist, loves to write music, but has never been able to really dive in. And so just talk about visioning. So for myself, one of the visioning things was, you know, if I was to have a relationship with someone in the industry and you were on my visual. Yeah, no, for sure. Because I just admire and respect what you've been able to accomplish and staying true to yourself and the brand. And it's amazing to watch. So being in this space right now is very amazing for me.
Well, I don't know about that, but I will say just being still standing after 25 years, I think that's more, I don't know how well I've done it, but I do know I'm still standing. And you know, that's, you realize as you go along, that's the hard thing actually.
Yeah.
Because it's hard.
Keep going and find balance and juggle
and
it all.
And it's you leading that. Yeah. It's you driving that.
That's right.
And you have to continue to have that drive to keep it rolling.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Well, thank you. What do your children have to say about your success?
Oh, gosh.
I know, that kind of makes me emotional, too.
It's a choker-upper.
I know, because you have really, really accomplished, interesting, lovely children.
Oh, yeah, they're really great. They're all so different, which is great. You know.
That's the sign of a great parent. Oh,
wow. They love it. And the girls aren't interested. They're not, you know, going to – I'm not passing the baton to them. And my son is – we think going into business, so maybe, but not interested right now. They're thrilled. Like, they're really supportive and great. And they encourage me a lot. And they take a lot of pride in what I'm doing. And I think they're inspired by it.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you think –
my voice is going to crack, but
yeah, how do
they
you
do
think
tell me that.
Watching them follow your dreams, how do you think that's affected them?
I think that, yeah, you've got to follow your soul's calling and do what's right for you. And they each are doing that. And I think that's a big message for all the young people today is don't sell out. Stick with it and do what feeds your soul and it will pay off. And do it when the timing's right for you, but definitely do it.
Well, and it's interesting too because I think that the other thing, I have no doubt you would have been successful whenever you had done it. But I think it's an interesting time because I think before you would not have had the ability to almost be successful on your own because of the control with social media.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in the past it was like, can I get placed in Vogue? Can I get, you know, Elle to write about me? And then I could be successful. But now, like, it's 100% in your control. It's a fascinating time.
That's such a great point. And that's exactly when it all started to kind of happen. And so exactly, that's exactly how it happened for me. And social media is, of course, a double-edged sword. But it's here to stay. And so from a marketing perspective, it's super important that we harness it and we use it thoughtfully, but we need to use it.
Yeah, it's a really powerful time.
It is very powerful.
I need to know what you wore to the prom.
Oh, my God. Oh, prom. Okay. Gosh. So... 1 year, I wore a strapless. It was white.
Ooh, pretty.
And I did like pearl drop, the double pearl drop earrings.
Pretty.
It was slightly iridescent, like a damask. So it had a floral pattern woven in it, but in it was sort of you know, it was iridescent.
There How was sort pretty. Of like that some sounds rainbow. Very Calvin.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it was a foreshadowing with the floral and the color. And then A-line, don't know if it had pockets, but it should have had pockets. Oh, yeah,
for sure.
So, and I think it was either Laura Ashley or Laura Ashley. But, you know, I wore a lot of like Jessica McClintock. Oh, yeah. And Gunny Sacks.
Gunny Sacks, I was going to say.
So it was somewhere in that realm.
I love it. Sounds fabulous.
Yeah. And then one year I know I wore a hat.
What?
And put some like dried
flowers. This is a first. Wait a minute.
I did. I definitely wore a hat. Yeah.
What kind of hat?
It was a straw hat. I think it was pink.
What?
Yeah, I was into hats.
I like this.
Yeah.
Was it just like a floppy?
Like, yeah, it was like a
church, like an
Easter
hat. Maybe
it was another foreshadowing. Like I had like a brim. I don't know why I thought I needed the hat, but I definitely wore a hat.
But what in the world was the dress with this hat?
I think it was.
I love that you don't even you
the Gunny Sack vibe. I think no. I just remember the hat.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah,
that is a first.
I was always trying to make someone of a fashion
a fashion moment. I love it. Don't you remember too getting 17 magazine and like flipping straight to the Gunny Sack ads? You were like, okay, I would wear that one to the prom. I would not wear that to the prom.
Yep. That's it. You nailed it. That's it.
I love it.
Aww.
Thank you, Sue, so much.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much for having me.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.